Alante here. Before I start this week's episode, I want to thank you for taking time to listen to this audio blog. Blackening Grad School was created to encourage and empower women and people of color to and through the grad school journey. Enjoy! Hey y'all, it's Alante with another episode of Black and in Grad School, and today I have a very special guest. I met Dr. D via email as one of the listeners for the podcast, and I'm so grateful that she has agreed to share her experience. I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but I just promise y'all she is an academic beast. And so I am so happy to have you here, Dr. D. Welcome.
Thank you, Alante. You make me feel so good. You pumping me up and everything, right?
Look, I mean it. Okay, she sent these receipts, y'all, in the first email, and I was like, oh, I'm work. This is the real deal. We've got to, you know, really talk to her and, you know, hear your experience and also, you know, make sure that we understand as students, you know, what it looks like on the other end. And so we're always like someone motivating to talk to is people who are, you know, relatively new out of graduate school, but really flourishing. So I'm gonna let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit of your background, and then we'll get into the questions.
All right. So yes, I go by Dr. D for short. I'm actually a researcher. I do research in public health around cancer disparities. I basically was pre-med and undergrad, you know, because so many Black low-income kids are like, I want to be successful. So you think doctor, lawyer. So I went into the whole pre-med track. And while I was interested in medicine, I really got to a point where I didn't really like clinical medicine, right? I'd done all these internships and shadowing, and there was just something a little, I don't know, boring about it, and something a little bit... how do you say, it was just kind of treating one person at a time. And I was very concerned with some of the bigger issues that I kept seeing, some of the bigger patterns that you would see between patients. And so I was fortunate enough to have a study abroad experience that really put in perspective the importance of public health and looking at ways that we can move whole populations and improve their outcomes. And so I ended up taking a detour and getting my master's in public health at George Washington University. And then once I finished up that degree, I fell in love with it. And so I actually worked in the field as a researcher, as a research assistant, and worked my way all the way up to research coordinator. And I was fine, you know, working for a researcher, you know, carrying out the studies that they were designing. A lot of them were on health disparities. So differences, racial differences in health outcomes, things that are not biological but caused by social differences. And so doing that work, as much as I was interested in it, I started getting dissatisfied maybe 5 or 6 years in, because there were a lot of researchers doing health disparities work that honestly aren't from the communities that they're studying. You know, you see this dynamic a lot. So there might be people doing research on disparities, Black-white disparities, and cardiovascular disease. And those people are really going off the knowledge of things that they've read in articles and theories, but they don't really have on-the-ground experience with the populations. And, you know, I started feeling a kind of way about that, especially because a lot of the staff members on the projects were people of color, and the researchers were white, and the patients were people of color. So that presented some interesting dynamics. So I decided I was going to go back to school myself, because I thought I had some ideas about how to do this kind of work. And, you know, I felt like I could contribute something special to that kind of work. So I ended up going to University of South Carolina and finishing my doctorate, which I finally finished up this year. Yay. Literally just got my diploma in the mail a couple of months ago, even though I defended last year in 2017. Sometimes the paperwork process can take a bit. So developed my work, started doing work research in cancer disparities. I was really fortunate to have a very good mentor that really took a personal interest in me. And is honestly still my mentor to this day, because we are still talking about things as far as research projects that we're going to be working on together and just other things in the field. She still gives me great advice about things. And so, you know, while I was finishing up my degree, even though I didn't have my dissertation all done, I was still collecting data. You know, I was thinking, okay, what's going to happen next year? I planned to graduate in 2017. So I decided, let me go on the job market now, because sometimes, you know, it takes a while on the academic job market and you don't get a job the first time out. So I went on a job market in 2016 and it actually was successful. I got one phone interview and that turned into a campus visit. And then I received an offer for my current job. And I'm an assistant professor in a health department, in a public health department right now. So, yes. So I started that job last year in August. So this is me finally concluding that first year of life on the tenure track. So new university, new job, new state. So it's definitely been a whirlwind of a year of adjustment. But I'm liking it. You know, I'm doing the research projects that I've been dreaming about doing. I actually have doctoral and master's and undergraduate students working for me. So that's been a bit of a trip to be on the other side. So that's kind of how I got to where I am and then where I am now.
I love it. So you told us kind of about this aha moment, and can you just kind of quickly tell us like the timeline for, we're going to get back to this, but the timeline for going from your, from looking for a job to securing a position.
You mean on the academic job market?
Right.
Yeah, because just to clarify, I'm one of those, I guess you would say, non-traditional students, because even I went through my undergraduate degree in time and, you know, graduated in 21 and I did my master's right after. And then I was out in the workforce for about 7-8 years before I decided to go back to my doctorate and get my doctorate. So I was in my 30s when I started my doctoral program. And so I'm in my late 30s now, you know, finally finished up. So yes, timeline wise, the academic job market is very interesting because it's a full year cycle. It's very rare to be able to get on the job market and have a job within a month or two. The way it tends to work is that jobs open up at the end of, summer, early fall, just depending on whatever field you're in, whether it's health, English, whatever, you know, engineering. There's just kind of a certain point in the year jobs will open up, usually before your national conference, right? Because they like to set it up so that job openings are out there, people are applying, and by the time the applications come into the committee, it might be around your national conference. So then they can, if you're presenting at your national conference, they can maybe go and look at your presentation or arrange to maybe meet with you informally. Or in some fields, they actually have the first round of interviews at their actual national conference. So in general, some 2 to 3 months before your national conference, you'll see job openings start popping up. So in public health, that's, you know, August, September, et cetera. And you'll put your applications in, and usually there are multiple stages. In my process, the first stage was a phone interview. Sometimes people will do other things like ask you for references first or whatever, but usually the phone interview means you've made it to kind of like the shorter list. You know, we're interested in you. And so they'll, you know, ask you a bit of questions about your research, but as well as also about your teaching and potentially, if you've done any kind of service as a doctoral student or what kinds of service you might have done, you know, in your professional organization, things like that. And so that's kind of what that interview will be like. And they'll ask you about your what potential fit within that department, how you see yourself contributing to that department and to that university. And then if they like you, they will call you back and ask you to come on campus for an interview. And that on-campus interview is a marathon. You're usually there for 2 days, maybe 3 days, just depending on the schedule. You have to do what they call a job talk, which is unlike anything you've done before, because it's talking about all of your research to date and some of your future projects, as well as trying to talk about your teaching and potentially, like I said, some of the bigger service things you'd like to do. So on some level, it's a story of yourself and who you are and how you fit. And so you'll present that to, it'll usually be open presentation. So all the faculty in that department you're applying for will be there. Students, grad students in that department will be there. They'll ask you questions about your work, et cetera. Leading up to that, you'll have breakfasts, lunches, and dinners with different faculty members in that department who you might collaborate with your department chair, with the potential department chair, with the dean of the school. And depending on other factors, there might be other people, whether there's some kind of research institute that might be collaborating with you. You would meet with the head of that institute. So you're on for at least 2 full days because of all of these different meetings. And like I said, some of them are happening over breakfast, over lunch, and then there are usually dinners every single night. So you're like having to perform and show them what it would be like to have you as a colleague. And then after that, you can hear something the next day. You might not hear for several months as far as when, what decision they've made. I had interviewed in November. Oh, no, it wasn't November. It was December. It was December. And then I drove home on a Friday and I heard from my department on a Monday because I was the last person being interviewed. But you know, that person who got interviewed first probably had to wait at least a month to hear anything. And then I accepted the position in January of 2017. Yeah. But I've known people, like a good colleague of mine, she graduated, we were in the same doctoral cohort, but she graduated the year before me. She was interviewing all the way from October up until April, and she graduated in May. And in May, that last interview she had, she had been contacted and they gave her a job offer. So the process can vary so much. Some of it has to do with the individual departments and what their processes are, because they'll have committees where they vote on, you know, who the candidates are. Sometimes the committee can just say who's an acceptable candidate or not. Sometimes the committee gets to rank order the candidates and say who's first, second, or third. That list will go to the department chair. Sometimes the department chair can make their own decision and throw out the committee's recommendations. Sometimes the department chair has to go to the dean, and the dean can throw out those recommendations. So there's a whole lot of, you know, kind of bureaucracy on some level that happens in the background. And as a candidate, you don't know this. You just know that you haven't heard from anybody over the phone. Oh. Right. So it just all depends. And then also depending on what type of school. So like the bigger schools tend to kind of go first. So, you know, your R1 level schools, your research ones, you know, they will open up first. They'll put their jobs out first, and they're trying to be wrapped up by maybe December, January. The R2s and the school I'm at is kind of an R2. So we have doctoral programs, but we don't have the same level of research productivity as an R1. So like as a Harvard or a Stanford or University of Michigan, something like that. But we do have doctoral, you know, programs, and that's kind of what makes us an R2. And we do have some research funding from federal sources. And then R3 is really a teaching focused school, where they want people who do research, but they really want people who are focused on teaching, who have a very strong teaching track record. And sometimes at schools like that, instead of doing a job talk, they'll actually ask you to do a teaching demo. And they'll tell you what class they want you to come in and teach one section of, you know, it's usually an intro class that you would know the content or whatever. So that's kind of how that goes. So the R2s open up later in the cycle, and then the R3s, the teaching heavy, they're opening up, you know, usually in the spring. So it takes a whole year for this whole process to unfold. And ideally, by the time May or June rolls around, the school has confirmed all of its new hires, or the department's confirmed all of its new hires, because those folks are going to start in August.
Right. Wow. Okay. That was really thorough. Thank you. Okay. So, Dr. D, you kind of told us that you were at a hospital. So, like, why did you choose to go into tenure track in academia versus going back to that hospital setting you were in before?
That's a really good question, because at first when I went back, I was on this, I don't know if I really want to be an academic, and, you know, things ain't really problem. It was just, you know, and again, I had experiences working with professors and researchers, so it was shaped by that. And so I was not sure if I wanted to be academic or be more applied or practice, because, you know, I'm in public health, so I could work at a nonprofit, hospital, health department, CDC, like, there are tons of opportunities. And if I felt like I still wanted to teach a little, I could always teach at whatever school was local to me, you know, on a part-time basis, and just be an adjunct and teach a class on the side, right? So there's many ways to put that together in my field. But it really was that first year that taught me what I wanted to do. And that's kind of, I would tell students to kind of like pay attention. So I really liked the process, like, even though it's challenging, but like when I would write up grants and then it would finally click, you get to that moment where you're like, yeah, this is the right. So this is the theory I'm using. And so I need to use this method. And then it would just kind of click and you'd be like, oh, this is a good project. I can't wait to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And the same thing when you get to a point where you're writing a paper and you're like, you're struggling with your data analysis and you run it a couple different ways. And then you think on it, and then you read something, then it just clicks and you're like, oh, that's what this means. And then so it's like I kind of get a little excited at that point too. So those two things really told me that I really wanted to do research. And you can do research outside of academia, but usually you might be working for a place like a RTI, so Research Triangle Institute, or some other, you know, for-profit place that does research, but they're doing contracts. So the research problem is something that your contractor has decided they want to work on, and then you're just carrying out the legwork. You don't really have that much choice in the types of projects you do. Your agency is just contracted to do what's out there. And so that's the downside with that. And I had ideas about different studies I wanted to do and where I could build, you know, my research or whatever. So that was one thing. And then the second thing was mentoring. So I already had the experience of working as a supervisor and mentoring people or whatever. But it's not the same as when you mentor students. When I was a doctoral student, we did have an undergraduate student that my mentor paired me up with, and I spent a couple of years mentoring her. Mm. And it was so rewarding to see her grow over those years. And now I find myself in the same spot where I have an undergraduate, you know, who she constantly surprises me in the things that she's able to achieve. And it's like, you kind of feel like, you kind of almost feel like you're a little bit of a parent, and you're seeing, you know, the little baby bird stretch its wings and fly off. And I really, really like that part of it. And you don't get that level of, that's not the same as a supervisor mentoring relationship when you're out in the workforce. That's just not the way it usually works. And so between that, knowing that I really wanted to do the mentoring piece and really liking the research, that's what made me say, okay, I want to be on the tenure track. I wasn't that into the teaching part, but actually now that I've got more teaching experience under my belt and I'm actually teaching in my subfield, mm-hmm. the topic that I teach right now is in my subfield, I do love it. Okay. So teaching is a challenge if it's not your, you know, the thing that you love. And sometimes you have to teach outside your field because your department needs you to teach XYZ class.
Right.
You know, but if you're able to teach within your field or your subspecialty, that will carry you through. You'll have a joy and a passion for putting the class together and even for grading.
Ooh, a passion for grading. Now, that is not something I've heard often.
Well, look, it's not my most favorite part of the job. Any professor will tell you that is the least desirable part of the job. Mm-hmm. But also you start read, especially when you read papers and the students get it, or sometimes I do give a lot of extra credit and my students will do the extra credit and be like, they'll need to pick a video or something that relates to course content, and then I'll have them reflect on different pieces of it. And then you start reading these reflections and you start seeing the gears turn or how they're making connections with the content into real life stuff. And you're like, you know, that's a little exciting too. And you're like, okay, I did make a difference here. They really did learn something from me.
Nice. That's so beautiful. Okay. Yeah. So, you kind of touched on this, but I just wanted to know, what has been the hardest part of your transition?
Oh, I mean, it's a lot. Okay. One, being an older student, transitioning from, you know, going back to school as an older student, you just haven't been writing and reading as mm-hmm. much as you have. So that already is a learning curve that I had to deal with. I was fortunate that I knew a couple other older students. So it was like, yeah, you're not crazy. Like it's like your processing speed slows down if you're not constantly reading. So you kind of have to gear back up.
Yeah.
And then, so that transition, obviously transitioning with just moving, you know, to different areas and stuff, and building back up a kind of like a support system, because when you're new, you know, your cohort might be 15 people or something. That was my cohort. And, you know, I've had some good friends, but it took a while to develop those friendships.
For sure.
And then about the time when those friendships get really solid, everybody's kind of moving, going somewhere because they're doing their dissertation data collection, whether it's to another country or another state. And so you're kind of sort of alone again when it comes down to dissertation time. And so that's definitely, I found that a challenge, and most people do. Dissertation years are very lonely years. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's in that point right now, please go into your office, even though you're not as productive when you're there. You still need to go into your office on campus and be around people and maybe do a writing group or something so that you can talk through your ideas. Don't, you know, it's really easy to just stay at home, work from home all the time and kind of be alone. And that's not really good for your mental health. So the dissertation years, definitely try to still be engaged in campus life to the extent that you can. The other challenges is balancing the work and the workload, because mm-hmm. academia is challenging. And there are a lot of times when you're working nights and weekends and all you do is just work, work, work. A colleague of mine had told me, I remember my first semester asking her, like, is it going to get any better? And she was like, no, you just learn how to, like, no, but what she said was, you just learn how to manage more.
Mm-hmm.
And she was right. Because every semester more gets put on your plate. You know, when you first start out, you're just trying to balance courses and doing research for, you know, your assistantship job or whatever. Then eventually you're going to start writing manuscripts and going to conferences and presenting. And then after that, you're going to be trying to write your own research, or maybe you're mentoring a student, or they'll have you start teaching. Like, there's always going to be something else that gets put on your plate and you kind of have to adjust. Same thing happens with faculty, you know what I'm saying? Like, then, you know, the first year I've been protected because I'm a new faculty member. So a lot of people haven't been asking me to be on committees and do different things. That's going to change this upcoming year because now I'm not so-called the new kid on the block.
Right.
So it's like now I'm doing all this research and trying to get papers out and get grants out, but I still have committee meetings for the different teaching programs, the different, you know, programs that we teach, the degree programs that we offer. I have other committee meetings. I have meetings for my national association because I'm running for an office within my national association this year. Like, there's so much, there's always more stuff that gets added, and that's just it. And you just have to find a way to say, okay, well, this is the work that's going to get done for the week, and maybe adjust your expectations on what's going to get done in this month. Because life is going to happen. Like, I had mentioned to you before we got on this call, like, my mom passed away when I was supposed to defend my dissertation, right? So I had to deal with that. You know, my best friend got married, and then she just had a baby last year. So, like, those are events that you have to be present for, and maybe you're going to have to fly somewhere and be a part of those events or what have you. You just learn that these things are still going to happen, and your work unfortunately sometimes has to stop or slow down to accommodate that stuff. So, but yeah, so those are the challenges, just trying to balance work and your personal life. And it's always going to be a bit of a struggle because we, as academics, we don't have these 9-to-5 jobs.
Right.
And so that's the challenge from, you know, the challenge just builds as you go through grad school. It builds as you become a faculty member.
Wow. So, okay. That was so insightful. Thank you. I'm like, the way that you said it, I think, is encouraging. Like,
yeah.
You learn how to manage more.
Right. You learn how to manage more. You start setting some not hard deadlines, but especially if you start engaging in more productivity practices. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's starting to be more stuff out there about productivity for academics, where you can try to do this mostly as a 9-to-5 job and maybe work one night a week or whatever, right? Like, that's the goal, really, because if your work is just spilling out all into the night and the weekends, you don't get a break from it. You're not as good of a writer if you don't take time away from your writing.
Yes.
And then your self-care, you know, whether it's working out or doing fun things that you love, spending time with your family, that stuff, you know, falls to the wayside. Because, I mean, what's the point of having this great career and helping all these other people, and then all of your personal relationships have withered and died because you didn't tend to them?
That's
so incredible. What I just want to say is that it's always an adjustment. And if, like, you get to a semester where it's particularly rough, that's okay, because that is what this job is about. And you have to learn how to change and shift with every new problem or new set of circumstances that you get presented with. And what worked last semester or last year isn't necessarily going to work next year. And just be okay with changing things up to see what will work.
Right. Okay, last question.
All right.
What were the benefits for you, or do you view the benefits of working before you went back to pursue a PhD?
Oh, girl, you got some good questions. All right. You know what? I will say it made me more focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, remember you were talking about how you feel like, oh, I did so much in my doctorate degree, because I was really focused on what I wanted to get out of it.
Right.
I know that there are people who will go and get a doctorate just because they think it's the next step or it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And doing doctoral work, and especially doing that dissertation, is so hard. It is not an easy thing to do. And most people don't finish. They say about 50% of people who start doctoral degrees do not finish, right? So you have to be extremely motivated to do the thing that you're doing. Again, I had a passion. I had already worked out in the field, so I saw some of these health disparities, and I saw how there were, you know, Black people dying of these diseases that could be so prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And that I had questions about whether or not the people who were doing these studies were doing it because they really wanted to see benefits in these communities, or because they knew that they could write a paper off of it, which would help them move on to their career, right? And not really having any intention of doing anything outside of just writing that manuscript, right?
Right.
Not trying to take that information forward and seeing what programs can be developed or what policy changes can be made to help these groups of people. And so being that I know that that was what my focus was, working with hand in hand with communities of color and with Black doctors and, you know, doctors who are serving minority populations and whatnot, and working with them to do research that really targets our community, but it's really catered to our communities and our needs.
Right.
Like, that was the thing that kept me moving, especially when it was really hard. You get challenges and you're like, okay, that's why I'm doing this, right? Because you'll have all types of challenges, administrative challenges, budget challenges. I mean, run the gamut,
right?
But if you have that passion for that thing that you're doing, for what got you into this, you know, line of work, you won't quit. Even when it gets hard, you'll stay focused. And then, like I said, because I knew exactly what it is that I want. I didn't know exactly what the topic would end up being, but I knew that, you know, I wanted to do health disparities work within cancer and pretty much on the prevention side. And then during my coursework, I kind of narrowed it down. But I had a specific idea of kind of what I wanted to do. And so I was able to kind of zero in and stay focused. I find that with a lot of students who are returning, they're just much more focused because we've been out there in the work world and we're not on some fantasy of like, oh, out in the corporate world is better. Right. There are problems. There are problems in the corporate world. You have bad coworkers in the corporate world. You have bad coworkers in academia, bad bosses. It's problems everywhere.
Right.
But, but you know, when you have been out there and you kind of see, you know, what it's like, you come to this, you focus. Most of my colleagues who are older students like me who are returning, you know, from being out of school for a while, we were some of the most productive ones because we were just kind of like, we got to get this thing done. And then we got to move back onto our life because
right.
You have to think about it. There's a big opportunity cost with going back to school, right? So if right. you think about it in the sense of one, there's lost wages,
right?
But then the other thing to think about, and I don't know if a lot of your folks might not think about this, that's lost retirement wages.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that time that you're working, even if, you know, you come out on the other end of it and you make more money, which often you can, you've not been putting in money in retirement and your job has not been matching that money all the time that you've been out, right? So now you kind of have to make up for that.
Right.
You know, people are saving and buying houses and, you know what I'm saying? Like your friends are going to be moving on with their lives and kind of moving to the next level. And on some level, because of the finances of grad school and how that works, you're not able to move to those levels, right? So you're kind of in a bit of a holding pattern until you're finished with your degree, you know? And then, like I said, who knows what happens while you're in school? And, you know, like I said, whether it's a death of a parent or people, you know, want to get married and have kids, like things... Like, all these things will happen while you're in school, and then you have to try to be able to adjust. And you might have been able to adjust easier if you were working your full-time job.
Yes, Lord.
Yes. So, you know, it's a real serious decision. And like I said, I think because when you're out in the workforce, you kind of are cognizant of these things a bit more. So you are very motivated to get through your program, you know, as... I wouldn't say as quickly, but as efficiently as possible. Because I also know people who are like, oh, I'm trying to finish my PhD in 3 years. And I'm like, okay, but what is that going to net you? Like, if you don't have products by the end of 3 years, then you might as well stay for five.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Because right. True.
Technically, I took what? That's 2012. So technically, I took 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really done that fifth year. It's just I had to, you know, put things on hold. But yeah, but then I had at least one first authored manuscript by the time I was done. And I had a successful grant record. Like, I had written and gotten several grants.
Nice.
So, like, yeah, so for me, it was about products. I knew how many papers I kind of wanted to have out, you know, and what types of research I wanted to at least have started in my doctoral program so that when I moved on to, you know, tenure track lane, that I could say at least I had some initial expertise in this area, this area, this area, and now I'm just building on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, and it's going to be a challenge because some people are going to be like, well, you shouldn't do all those different areas. It's too much. And, you know, you should just focus on this one thing. And, you know, even my mentor is like, well, you shouldn't do all these areas. But now at the other end, she's all like, oh, okay, I see what you was doing. Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. That makes sense. So, nice. You know, sometimes you just kind of have to do the thing that you know and just go with it. Regardless of what they're telling you, you know, it's not going to work or whatever. Sometimes you just have to move forward and trust your own instincts.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much, Dr. D. Like, this conversation did not go the way I planned, but it was I mean, you really provided a lot of insight. And as someone who, you know, I actually did have a great aunt who had a PhD, but I never knew it until she passed. And and she passed when I was like 12. So, you know, it's not like I was able to sit down and ask her all of these questions. And so a lot of times I still, you know, very much so, like, you know, it's like in a dark room where you're feeling around, where you're not at your own house or somebody else's house. You're just kind of feeling around.
And honestly, I feel like, honestly, for a lot of, like, people of color, black folks, a lot of us, unless we have somebody in our family who's done this thing recently, we don't know.
Right.
And it's hard to say we don't know because we're supposed to be coming into a doctoral program, right? But we're supposed to know how academia works and everything or whatever. And I think this is what we call, I guess, some of the soft skills pieces that we don't get and that we don't have in our social network, so we don't understand. Because you talk to any of my students, they'll tell you, oh, doctor, I'll sit down and talk with you, you know, about, you know, what your career path is and what you do, how grad school, how master's program from undergrad is different from, you know, master's, and how you need to set up. Because that's stuff that we usually don't know, and people have not told us anything about. And so we have to kind of feel around and figure it out without looking like we're totally clueless.
Right.
So I definitely advise people, especially if you're interested in academia, I would say definitely reach out to someone who's more younger, because they'll be a little bit more understanding. You know, folks get a little bit older, they forget how much stuff they didn't know when they know. But like, you know, someone who's still a new assistant professor or recently finished, you know, PhD or whatever. Like, you have to have mentors at all different levels. You can't just have the mentor at your level. Mm-hmm. I have mentors that are full professors, associates. When I was a doc student, I had mentors that were just doc students a few years ahead of me, mm-hmm. versus ones who are new in being assistant professors, right? So I could ask those new assistant professors, I asked a lot more about the job market, you know, than I did the fulls, because they had done it more recently.
Right.
So, you know, ask those questions, especially like the new ones, because they just been through it. So say, hey, can we have lunch? I just kind of want to hear a little bit more about how you just, you know, got into your position at XYZ University and what made you decide to do it. And that's how you can start to learn some of these things and, you know, ask them, you're an assistant professor, right? What does that mean?
Right.
You know, that, yeah. And then if there are graduate student associations for students of color at your university or even within your field, ask them to do a panel about the academic job market, you know, and academic jobs, you know, for your group. It's going to be really helpful.
Right.
I think it'll be a space, you know, a safe space and people can ask questions.
Yeah. I think that's amazing, because I'm like, I'm over here like, you know, you just don't know what you don't know. I'm like, I didn't know any of this, and I need to know this because I want, you know, to have a career in academia. So thank you so much. We are going to switch over to my favorite segment,
yes,
which is Lessons from the Trap. So Dr. D, let us know what you got.
Okay, all right. So I know everybody's supposed to only have one song,
but totally okay.
Of course I got two songs, right?
Yeah.
So first is because I'm part of the Beehive,
yes.
And I'm going to On the Run 2 in September.
Nice. In her birthday month. I'm not jealous.
Yes, I didn't even think about that because it's a friend of mine's birthday.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to see my friend who I haven't seen in a couple years. So a friend I met in grad school.
Nice.
So I'm gonna go see her, and we're in like the day before her birthday is a concert. So
fun.
Yes, so I got a song from the Carters. I've been pumping this on replay, Boss.
Mm-hmm.
So already just the title, Boss, right? But my line is, and I'm working through my process and starting to forgive Jay-Z. My line is the success line, when he says, we measure success by how many people successful next to you. Here we say you broke if everybody else broke except for you, right? So I know this is like a little outside the scope, but to me, it really talks about like the whole mentoring piece that I talked about, right?
Sure.
So in other words, some folks is working with you. So I got students that's working for me and stuff. It's not enough to just have them working for me. Like, I want them to be successful in whatever it is they want to do. So they should be getting something else out of working with me. And that goes beyond just like a recommendation letter. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
I can put them onto some, whether it's going to a conference, you know, co-authorship on an article, you know, helping them write a grant so they got their own money to do research, whatever it is. Like, you know, some people get into this academia game and it's all about self. And that's sometimes that's still even people of color. You would think, oh, okay, there's this other Black professor, they gonna help me out. Not necessarily.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of the hard lessons I learned in the first year. Everybody out here ain't really out here for the community or whatnot, or for other folks like
what
them.
What they say, you know? all your skin folk ain't your kin folk.
Girl, tell it. So yeah, because I was really flummoxed by this thing, because it was this particular professor that I thought was going to be a mentor to me, and that person just was giving me all types of like, I'm not interested in you, back up. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I started talking to other faculty of color, other Black females I knew, and it was like, yeah, so sometimes when that person's been the only for so long, when a new person comes up, they threaten. And I'm like, but this person is, you know, they're senior. I'm not, there's no way I can even, you know, right. I can't take their job. Like, I'm 1 year on this thing. They were like, but that's I had several people tell me like, oh, that's what that's about.
Wow. I was like, oh. So I'm originally from New York, so I'm low-key obsessed with Cardi B. No, I'm not from the Bronx. That's my girl. It's just seeing a round-the-way girl just on the come up does something for my spirit, yes. Right? So I love everything Cardi does, even when she's problematic. That's okay. She's growing. She's growing.
Yes.
All right, so I actually have two quotes from this song, the song Best Life. So the first quote is, I'm giggling, can't let the devil have the last laugh. Ain't no more beefing, I'm just keeping to myself. I'm my own competition, I'm competing with myself. So, one, the devil can't have the last laugh because he's short. He's been trying it with this interview.
Right.
We got disconnected how many times? But anyway.
Man.
All right. But the other thing, really, that last line, like, I'm my own competition, I'm competing with myself. Because, honestly, for however long my CV is, I've got colleagues who have CVs 10 times as long as me at the same level. You know what I'm saying? And if you get in that game where you always looking at what so-and-so's doing, you won't be able to appreciate the things that you've achieved and you've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So, for real, I'm my own competition. I'm competing with myself. I'm the only one who's known the things that I've been through in my life and where I've come from and how much I've grown. And so, I'm my own measuring stick. And with that, you'll always want to be striving to do better, but also appreciating, you know, the things that you have achieved and not feeling miserable because you don't have what so-and-so down the street has or what so-and-so at whatever university is doing. You're not doing it. No, you have to be your own individual and your own person.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then later on in the song, she says, I never had problems showing y'all the real me. Hair when it's effed up, crib when it's filthy. Way before the deal me, the strip to pay the bills me. Before I fixed my teeth, man, those comments used to kill me. But I never did I change, never been ashamed. Never did I switch, story stayed the same. I did this on my own, I made this a lane. Again, you know what I'm saying? Cardi been through some stuff. We all been through some stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she stayed true to herself. And that's why, again, why I love her so much. Because as much as she's changing and growing, she's still holding true to the things that she believes in and what she feels like, you know, her path is and who she is as a person. And that's hard in academia because a lot of people will kind of tell you, especially if you're a person in color, that you kind of have to code switch and
mm-hmm.
switch it up. And yeah, you're not the same in every single, you know, setting. You're not the same at work as you are at church and with your family and all of that. But at the same time, there is at least a cord of the authentic you that runs through all of those different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't feel like you have to change that essential core of who you are. And I do think for, you know, people of color going to academia, that is a challenge to figure out where that line is of when do you kind of change and be more of your professional, you know, doctor so-and-so self.
Right.
And when you kind of just, you know, when am I Dr. D and when am I just D
mm-hmm.
from around the way, you know, I try to be my authentic self as much as possible. I've definitely had people who were their authentic selves and made me more confident doing it. But yeah, and part of it is that, especially if you're in this setting where you're probably the first Black professor, many of your students have had Black or white or Asian or whatever, that is showing them that you can still be authentically Black and be an expert in your field.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really cold switch. I do say some y'alls and whatever, you know, when I teach. I try to be my authentic self. You know, I ask them little questions and stuff. You know, I'll tease them a little bit about music. I'll be like, yeah, y'all heard of the Migos? And they're like, what? Dr. D know about the Migos? I was like, see? Y'all thought I didn't know about that, didn't you?
Right.
Right? You know, but in other words, helping them break down those stereotypes of, okay, if I see someone acting in a so-called quote-unquote black, acting black culturally, that person also isn't intelligent,
right,
and whatnot. And so by being my authentic self and still being a hardcore researcher and, you know, a proficient teacher and whatnot, that kind of helps break some of those stereotypes to a degree, and honestly minimizes the amount of self-care I need to do, because code switching is exhausting.
Woo! So. You ain't never lied. Whoa, you never lied.
So, you know, at a certain point you just have to be who you are, and people either accept it or they don't, and you just gotta live your life.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Dr. D, thank you so much for just really, I think, shedding light on this entire space and like what's after the PhD. For those who are interested in academia, of course, what it looks like after and what these different titles mean, to what you can expect, to the cycle of applying, and then like you drop some gems as far as resources. I'll be sure to include those in the show notes as well. And I mean, this was just, I mean, so much information and so needed. So we got to have you on again to actually hear your story, because you dropped much goodness. But I just really am very, very grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it too, because as much as I talk my students' ear off, they probably don't know half of this stuff. Mm.
And now you can just send them to a good old episode. You don't have to say it no more. Check out episode such and such. There you go. Everything you need to know.
All right. There you go.
Thank you.
Hi, Alante again. I really want this project to be a resource for my fellow people of color and women in grad school. So if you have any questions or requests for topics, shoot me an email at alante@strengthsnotstrikes.com. That's A-L-L-A-N-T-E at strengthsnotstrikes.com. Please remember to subscribe and review and share with your other friends in grad school. Thank you.